kick off with, I believe, we, on the audio cast.
Jeff, can you hear us in Reston?
Yes, we can hear you in Reston.
Okay. When everybody gets settled, we're going to start with Margie.
Should I go ahead and get started? Okay, hi everyone, it's Margie Milam.
I'm sorry, Margie, this is Mason. If you don't mind, on the agenda, you're sort of broken out in three different spots, but if it's all right with you, do you mind just going through all of your presentations at once?
Actually, that'd be easier for me. David Olive just appeared. Do we want to reshuffle for a moment? And
If David has limited time and you have some extra time, then yeah, that'd probably be good.
Yeah, I can. I can wait till David is done. So.
All right. Great. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Mason. I'm sorry I'm a little late, but I thank you very much for this opportunity to take a few minutes of your time. I just joined the policy development team on February 15th as the new vice president. I'm happy to be part of a strong team and the team that is also supporting the policy development are here today. I'm in a listening and learning mode, and so I'm happy to hear more about the issues and the priorities of your group here and to provide the experts who know the issues that you want to hear about. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for making time to join the meeting. I wonder if you might just talk a bit about what you and your team have done so far to integrate you and, you know, learn about priorities that you're aware of, and have you thought of ways that would be particularly useful for our group to help you?
I have been going through a series of briefings with members of the team. The first baptism by fire has been this meeting in Nairobi. But I will be going through the materials I have, and I appreciate the opportunity to come back to this group about questions I have. I just wanted to also note that, as you see from my background, I've come from 20 years of business experience with Fujitsu, and I am understanding and sensitive to the interaction between business interests and policy and how that should work. And so I'm interested to hear the views that you have as we move forward on the policies that are ongoing and in the future.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, David. So I might just open it up to the floor here a bit. I know that David's new to the job, but if there are particular issues that registrars would like to bring up with David while he's in the room with us, we can take a few minutes to do that. If not, then David, just on behalf of all the registrars, I'd like to welcome you to ICANN, and we're looking forward to working with you and your team. I'm looking at the queue, and I don't see anyone just yet, but is there anyone who'd like to bring anything up with David while we have him?
And if not, I think you have my email address. Happy to hear from you that way.
All right, very good. Well, David, welcome again, and thanks for making time to come and meet with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. Margie, if you're ready, I'd like to turn the floor over to you.
Okay, that's great. We've got the slides up. I'm going to be talking to you about vertical integration and the special trademark issues.
Margie, before you start, I might just ask if you could, if you don't mind just taking a break between the issues to just anticipate questions.
Okay. That's great.
All right,
and please, you know, we can certainly take questions during the presentation as well. On this slide, I have a little bit of the recent developments on vertical integration. As many of you know, there was a request for an issues report submitted by the NCUC in September of last year. We delivered an issues report, and I'll talk about some of the high-level statements that we made in the issues report shortly in December. And in January, late January, the GNSO approved a PDP on vertical integration. We're currently working on the draft charter. There's a proposal that's on the table for vote on the GNSO Council's agenda tomorrow. And assuming that that gets approved, we're going to go ahead and look for volunteers to participate in this working group. And one of the things I want to let you know is that the working group is intended to get their work done in 16 weeks. It's going to be a very expedited policy development process, which means that all of the work would be concluded by June of this year. And so that's something that if you want to volunteer, it's going to probably require a significant amount of attention. I'll give you some high-level conclusions from the issues report. Essentially, what the issues report says is that the new GTLT implementation process, this is the process that Kurt's team is working on, is going on a parallel track with the GNSO PDP process. And the reason that this is the case is because there's the possibility that the GNSO Council will not reach conclusion on any policy development. There may not be consensus on policy recommendations to go to the board. And so the way that this is envisioned, the GNSO policy development process will continue and on this expedited track. And should there be recommendations that are produced and have consensus, that would go to the board, and then the board would decide whether they want to adopt them. And the tricky thing here is the timing, because as all of you know, we're trying to get to producing a next version of the draft applicant guidebook by Brussels meeting, and that's the reason for the expedited approach with this PDP. A couple things that are, I think, relevant to this group are that we talk about the scope issue in the issues report, and one of the issues that we raise in the issues report is that some of the policy development issues may not fall within the consensus policy definition under the contracts. And let me back up for a moment. I don't know if you realize that the PDP is meant to cover both new GTLDs and existing GTLDs. And so the GNSO Council is looking at it from both perspectives. And as a result, we have to look at the contracts to see whether or not, if a policy was adopted, whether it would fall within the scope of consensus policy development. And our initial conclusion, very high level, is that that there are questions as to whether some policies might be consensus policies that would be enforceable against registries and registrars. It all depends on the specifics, and so we won't know the answer until we get into details on what policy development might be produced within this group. But this is one of the issues that we raised for the GNSO Council, that there are questions about whether there would be a binding consensus policy that could be produced out of this group. And so there's an interesting conclusion here that if we can't have a binding consensus policy, we might end up in situations where there's different rules that apply to different registries, or if a policy development is not concluded quickly, we might end up with a situation where there's a policy that's adopted for subsequent rounds of new GTLDs, but not the initial round. And so that's some of the issues that the council's grappling with, because there may be a disconnect. There might be a situation where the first round of applications is under a certain set of rules, and new rules would apply in the second round of applications. And to provide a little background on how we reached this conclusion, as many of you know, the GNSO Council produced their recommendations on new GTLDs in 07, and they didn't consider this issue at that time. It was certainly something that they could have evaluated. And as part of the recommendations that came out in 07 and were approved by the board in 2008 was this recommendation number 10 that essentially says that there has to be a base contract that's provided to applicants at the beginning of the application process. So what that means is that the registry agreement has to be finalized at the very beginning so that the applicants know what they're getting themselves into. And the issue with vertical integration is that it will end up being a contract. It will likely be a contract issue. It'll be some requirement that says that registries, can't own a registrar, or if there's specific rules, all of that would be incorporated within the registry agreement itself. And so that's the urgency here. That's the reason why we're moving on a very expedited basis to try to deal with this issue. We also talk about in the issues report, just kind of the historical role of the GNSO Council, because there were some questions raised as to whether we could change the status quo. And so we have a little bit of history, and you can certainly read the report if you'd like. But essentially, when we looked into this issue, we realized that there's no status quo at the moment. There's lots of variations of registry agreements, and we actually summarize them in the issues report. And there's also been changes in practices over time that didn't involve GNSO council involvement. These are more practices that have been developed in response to market conditions that were reflected in amendments to the registry contracts. And so that's kind of been our past practice. Certainly, if the GNSO comes up with policy recommendations, those will probably be uniform. And then from here on, you know, there'll probably be a more consistent approach with respect to this issue. There's also been a little bit of controversy on the proposed charter, and hopefully we'll resolve this tomorrow at the GNSO Council level. Just to give you a high-level overview of the charter, the working group will evaluate policy recommendations for new GTLDs and existing GTLDs, as I discussed. And what it looks like the group wants to do is define the various restrictions that exist under the current agreements, to use it as a baseline to evaluate future proposals. And so we're going to go through this exercise of basically identifying all the variations of the registry, you know, restrictions that are, you know, in the .com agreement, the .net agreement, .mobi, and then have that be a baseline to compare any future proposals. And the one thing I wanted to point out that I wasn't able to summarize in the slide today is that we've just posted last night a new paper and with, I think, four options. And I don't know, John, you probably know more about it because I haven't had time to read it. But I just want to bring that to your attention. On the ICANN blog site, John Jeffries has posted additional documents prepared by the economists and have some options to consider. So I assume the working group will evaluate that as well.
Margie?
Yes?
Margie, we have a question from John, if we can break in right here.
So, quick question.
Chris is also in the queue.
Thanks, Mason. You mentioned, Margie, that you're going to put together the current contracts and separation, I guess, restrictions on vertical separation that are currently in effect. I think we put in the drafting team that you would look at past ones as well, because when these certain registries that are in existence now, the incumbents, started, they had different rules when they were getting going. So it would be important to see what they had when they started and what kind of restrictions they had, not only now, but when they were first formed.
I think that's correct. Actually, Stefan, you may know, I think we're going to look at both current and past. We've gone through an evolution in the charter, and I don't have the actual proposed charter in front of me, but that was raised. I think we'll, you know, lump them in different categories. This is what's out there now, and this is what was there in the past. And then, you know, I guess the group will decide, you know, whether they like the new proposals or whether they see it as a deviation from past practices. I'm not really sure where we'll end up.
Yeah.
Okay, we have Krista and then Jeff Eckhouse.
Mason, do you want me to
just... Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stefan. Yeah, sorry.
What Margie said is correct. The group is actually... The debate within the group that drafted this was that we could not look at both existing and future registries in the same way, and the PDP work would be difficult to apply to existing registries. But if it was determined that the new rules needed to be applied to VI, it would make sense that these rules also apply to existing registries. So in the charter, this, I'm not saying that's my opinion, that's the group's opinion. What was the issue you raised?
Oh, hold on.
The issue I raised was whether, if you look at what... Could you go back a slide?
Sure.
Margie just said that the group, and I guess this is led by the staff, would be looking at what the existing registry contracts have with regard to limitations on vertical or cross-ownership or vertical integration. I wanted to make sure something that we discussed in the working group, in the drafting team, I believe they discussed, was that they also looked at past contracts and past limitations on vertical integration and cross-ownership. So that way, you look at it, when you're looking at forming a new entrant into a market, you're not only comparing it to what the incumbents have today, but what they had when they started way back when.
Yeah, John, it's Jeff here. I'll respond to that we did. Yeah, I know. I'm inches away from the mic if there are complainers there. But we did add that in, and that was something specific that we would look at. And it's not – this is just what Margie put on is the preamble. Those were specific objectives where we said we would look at all previous contracts for existing for the existing registries, not only ones that are in effect now but were in effect in the past. So, for example, the one that Afilius and others had for info back in early 2001, 2002 when they first started. So we are going to review those as part of the working group.
And I might add that there was clear awareness within the group that there wasn't a standard policy in existence today. So most registries, if you look at existing registries, actually have a different set of rules pertaining to this. So that was the point was clearly made by... But us, Tim also made the point, I think, to the council that this was the case.
Okay, thanks. Krista?
I have two questions, actually. The first one is for Stanley. I mean, Stefan. And the second one's for Margie. So I'm sort of backtracking here one step up.
Don't you mean Livingston?
So, Stefan, my question for you is back to this PDP team, and you mentioned earlier that if other people wanted to join the team, do we actually need more registrar representation there? Or
the team that I was talking about is the drafting team. Now there's a different team that's going to be put together, which is called a working group, which is actually the drafting team's only task is to determine the charter, so the set of rules that the working group will need to adhere to. So that's the basic, you know, go away and work on this according to this set of objectives. Now there's a working group that's going to be formed if this motion is approved tomorrow by the council. And it's on that group that I was saying, yes, you know, we need some registrars on that.
Okay, thanks. And then my second question for Margie, which you may not actually know the answer, but I did read the paper that was posted this morning and the recommendations. And, you know, it talks about sort of market share and setting thresholds. And, I mean, maybe you have, like, high-level familiarity with it. But for new GTLDs and then that, you know, once those assessments were made, we can handle it different ways. What I didn't see in there, and I don't know if it's being considered, is... You know, once, let's say we have vertical integration and there's a company that is below the threshold that is, you know, acceptable, it doesn't talk about how to continue to monitor that so that if there are changes down the road, and I don't know if that's something that's being addressed at that level or if we're really just looking at initial, you know, setup of vertical integration.
I don't think I have an answer to that. I mean, at this point, I think they're just proposals, and they haven't really delved into the details. I assume once, you know, there's some sort of consensus on some option that they'll provide more detail. But again, I really don't have answers to that.
I have Tim in the queue for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have an answer for that, but I'll just give you my opinion, and that is that at least at that point, it would seem to me that it would be a matter for the competition authorities, wherever those entities are based, that those laws and rules and regulations, whatever exist in every nationality that I think we probably are concerned with, and that would certainly be their purview and not ICANN's, in my opinion.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Any other questions? Okay. Margie, go ahead.
Okay, so the next steps, as we indicated, the charter will be voted on tomorrow. We have our first meeting on Wednesday here in the Impala room. It's obviously very informal because we haven't even formed the working group, but we thought it would be useful to have whoever's interested and who might participate get together and just start thinking about how we're going to conduct this work. It's really, I think, really a logistics kind of thing and trying to figure out, to the extent that there are people present, there are people that are interested in working in this working group, whether we can start thinking about how we want to organize ourselves. And like I said, you know, we'll be looking for volunteers, but know that it will be a lot of work, similar to the STI work that was done before, where we spent many, many hours. If we want to conclude this on a, you know, on an expedited basis.
Margie, we have a question from Jeff.
Yeah, actually, Mason, this is more towards you and towards the group. I think what would you suggest is the best way for the registrars to coordinate ourselves for those who wish to participate in this working group? Is it to send you their name? What do you think is the best way to do this? I don't know if we're going to have an avalanche of interest or none at all, but it might be worth trying to coordinate.
Yes, that'd be fine. If anybody's interested in this, just send me an email and I'll collect it. Okay, sorry, Margie, back to you.
So are we done with vertical integration? Should I move on now to special trademark issues? I think so.
Anybody else for vertical integration? Okay, go ahead, Margie.
Okay, we had a session on this yesterday. I don't know if many of you were able to attend. But essentially, we produced a series of documents right before the Nairobi meeting with proposals on how to implement the various trademark solutions that are out there. And from staff's perspective, you know, we think that these are were pretty, you know, complete. The proposals represent a lot of the recommendations that came out of the STI working group. As many of you know, we put together this expedited group, and they came up with recommendations that modified the earlier proposals, and this STI group included a broad range of representatives from the various stakeholder groups, so it was a much more community-wide effort to come up with a proposal that, you know, could be workable and address some of the concerns that some had raised. They did reach consensus on the report with respect to a new model for the uniform rapid suspension procedure and the trademark clearinghouse procedure, and they sent that to the GNSO Council, and the GNSO Council unanimously approved those recommendations in December. And we posted that report for public comment, and the public comment was taken into account when we developed the proposals that were just published right before the Nairobi meeting. And so we had a session yesterday. It was fairly well attended, and I think the consensus in the audience was that looks like we're pretty close to done on the trademark clearinghouse and the uniform rapid suspension procedures. You know, and there's certain things that we probably need to clear up, but there wasn't a lot of opposition like we saw in the Sydney meeting, for example. With respect to the post-delegation dispute resolution procedure, I think that one probably needs a little bit more work, and but we're getting to the point of being able to come up with, you know, final models in a fairly, you know, short amount of time. And there's a public comment period open right now. It'll be open until April 1st. So if you have a chance to look at it and have any comments, we certainly recommend you, you know, providing comments as, you know, during that public comment period. And I mean, I don't know if you want me to go into the proposals. I mean, a lot of them have been on the table for quite some time. Essentially, you know, these are the main ones. The trademark clearinghouse, that would be a centralized database for trademark information. The uniform rapid suspension procedure, which is meant to be a quicker and faster way of dealing with clear-cut instances of trademark infringement. And then there's the post-delegation dispute mechanism that is really a way to address systemic abuse in registries. It's really meant to be covering a situation where a registry has engaged in affirmative conduct that's, you know, cyber squatting or violating their terms of their charter, and so that procedure is meant to deal with that situation. And then there's also a recommendation for Thick Who Is. And I've posted the links to the various proposals if you'd like to take a look at them. And any questions?
Anyone? Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to, I guess, make a comment here about, I guess, Margie, what you said, and I guess it sort of stems from what Peter said at the meeting yesterday, that that people, I guess, would say the board is ready to move and we're close to done. I just would hesitate from using those terms, like going forward, including staff, because I wouldn't want the, let's call it the anti-TLD groups or others, to say that ICANN is engaging in an unfair process, because we still have the comment period open, we still have other pieces, and just by using those terms, they're going to say, you know, there could be an opening for people to say it's an unfair process, things were decided before comment period, so I would just hesitate from using those terms, because I know you guys, of course, plan on going through the full comment period and the complete process, but wouldn't want to leave it an opening for people to think that, you know, it's a decision's already been made and people are going through the motions.
I agree. I mean, I think that, I mean, it's fully our intent to wait for the public comment period to close, evaluate them, provide a summary. I mean, it's, there's a lot of work involved in that, and we're certainly, you know, going to engage in that activity.
Any other questions? Okay, Margie. Margie, you have one more set, right?
I don't think I do.
Okay, sorry.
I think we're going to go to registration abuse next, I believe, with Marika. So give us one sec
while
we update the Adobe.
You're right. Okay, Margie, thanks very much for all your time.
Thank you.
All right, Marika is in the process of getting set up here. We'll get her slides in, and then Marika, the floor will be yours.
So this is Marika Konings. I'm a policy director at ICANN and supporting several of the GNSO working groups, and including the registration abuse policies working group. Well, James already gave you an overview of what this group has been doing, so might be a bit duplicate, but I'll go through my slides, and then if there are any questions, I'm happy to take those. So as a bit of background information, the observation was made in the GNSO Council that registries and registrars seem to lack uniform approaches in the ways in which they deal with the domain name registration abuse. And the question was asked, does that matter? Would more uniformity be a good thing or a bad thing, or what kind of impact would that have? And the question was also asked, what role should ICANN actually play in addressing registration abuse? And what of those issues, if any, are actually suitable for GNSO policy development? So it was decided to form, as we titled it, a pre-PDP working group. So this is actually not a policy development process yet. So this group was actually launched in March 2009 to look at some of those questions. So some of the questions that were given to this group to look at and come back with recommendations on is what is the difference between registration abuse and domain name use abuse, as this has an impact on whether consensus policies can be developed or not. What is actual effectiveness of existing abuse policies? Would there be any benefits to a more uniform approach by registries and registrars? So the working group has gone through all these questions and developed as well a list of abuses that they've defined and looked at what policy issues they were able to identify for each of those abuses. And on the basis of that, they've published an initial report that was put out on the 12th of February, and that's now open for public comment. So I'd like to encourage you all to review the report and submit your comments to that. So the initial report itself covers over 100 pages, which basically outlines the deliberations and the input received through the different discussions, and as well several sub-teams were formed to look in closer detail on some of the issues, such as, for example, uniformity of contracts. They looked at the various contracts to see what kind of provisions were in there. They did discuss whether more uniformity would be desirable or not. So based on all those deliberations, the group has come to recommendations on the issues that you see listed here on the slide. I'm not going to go into great detail on the actual recommendations now. And if you're interested, I would encourage you to come tomorrow afternoon. We'll be organizing an information session at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, which will go into further detail on each of these recommendations. And it might just be worth pointing out that on some of these, the group was able to reach unanimous consensus, but on others they weren't, and there are different positions laid out. So I think especially on those, the working group is very interested to receive feedback and input from the community so they can take that into account when they continue their work following the end of the public comment period, and hopefully are able to come to some kind of consensus on all the recommendations that are incorporated in the report. So as said, the next steps will be for the group to review and analyze the comments that they've received during the public comment period and update the report accordingly. The group hopes to have the final report ready in time for the GNSO to consider it at their meeting in Brussels. And on the basis of that, the GNSO Council is to consider recommendations and decide on next steps. Just to maybe clarify, some of these recommendations, for example, include recommendations for the initiations of policy development processes. So there, if the Council would agree with those, it'll have to go through the whole motion of initiating the PDP by requesting an issues report, and then a separate working group would be created to actually develop further recommendations on that. So this group is not putting forward recommendations for changes, but more recommendations for next steps on each of these issues that then will need to be considered and adopted according to the appropriate procedures by the GNSO Council. So here's just some further information. I said that the public comment forum is open until the 28th of March. Here's as well a link to the initial report. There are also translations available in the five UN languages of the executive summary for those interested in reading that in other languages. It's available from the GNSO page. I said there will be a more detailed presentation both during the GNSO Council session tomorrow morning and also in the afternoon, where there will be more opportunity as well for asking questions or providing comments on the report. Are there any questions?
Any questions from Marika? Go ahead. Eric's got a question.
Yeah, where's the report at, Marika? Could you give the URL?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Eric wants to know if there's a URL that you could publish to show where the report is.
Yes,
oh, it is right there.
It's on the slide. That's it's up there.
Okay. You can. You can click on it. Cool. Okay. Other questions? Jeff.
Yeah, question, I don't know, maybe James covered it and I'm just repeating it. Are we as registrars planning on commenting before the 28th of March period? I think we are, and if so, what is the status of those comments or our paper? I don't know if you want to give an update on that.
Yeah, James is here in the room, and maybe Clark is on the phone as well. He might have input on that.
Yeah, I was actually just walking over the microphone to say that Clark and I met on this report. We went through most of the recommendations, and I'll turn it over to him as far as where this is at.
Clark?
Thanks, Mason. I have James' comments. We're working on a first draft of the proposed RSG statement, which I hope to circulate before the end of the Nairobi meeting.
Okay, thanks, Clark. Okay, other questions? All right. Marika, thank you very much. Do you want to cover Pedner now?
Yes, just give me a second to pull up the slides.
Sure.
You
want
to do it? So, post-expiration was already covered to a certain extent as well by James, so I hope, again, I'm not being too duplicative. So, again, some background on this working group. It was an issue that was actually brought to the GNSO by the at-large group, And basically they raised some questions as to what extent should registrants be able to reclaim their domain names after they expire. So this working group is examining five questions that are part of its charter that all relate to expiration and renewal practices and policy. And this working group is expected to make recommendations for best practices and or consensus policies. As you're all aware, there is an existing consensus policy, the EDDP, that is currently in place. So one of the first things that the working group did with the support of staff is develop a registrar survey in which they actually looked at a top 10 registrars to get an idea of the existing practices in relation to renewal and expiration policies. And first of all, I just would like to thank all of those that have provided input and feedback to me on that. It was greatly appreciated. So the survey covers the top 10, which represents approximately 69% of the main name of domains registered. There's a link here to where you can find the actual survey and feedback received. But I think to cover it in one line, I mean, there's a more detailed presentation on the findings for each of the different questions that we asked. But overall, I think that the conclusion was that there are really many different approaches that exist among registrars. So one of the questions for the group, or that the group is debating, that does this matter? Should there be more uniformity, or is it actually a good thing that there are so many different approaches? And looking as well, depending on which area, should there be a more standardized approach, or is that not really an issue? So the group has already reviewed public comments and constituency statements received. There is already a first draft of the initial report, which basically just covers the discussions to date, as well as summary of the constituency and stakeholder group statements, as well as public comments. But the biggest gap in that report is actual recommendations or conclusions on each of the charter questions. And I think James already pointed out this group has struggled quite a bit because there are many different viewpoints in the group that have made discussion sometimes difficult, and we've gone over and over some of those issues maybe for too many times. So in order to help this working group forward, what we've done is actually put together a survey on the different questions that are in the charter and some of the sub-questions that are linked to that, in a way to actually assess where there is common ground and where there is really very different views, to have a more focused approach and be able to focus on those specific questions instead of going into the broader debate of all kinds of issues that are not directly related to the charter questions. The survey closed last Friday, and I've actually been working on putting all the information together, and I hope to get that out to the group later today or tomorrow. And I hope that many might be pleasantly surprised to see that there actually is more agreement on some of these questions that might have been derived from the actual discussions that have taken place in the group. I've seen that there are some questions where many agree on a certain position, so I really hope that this will help the group move forward and focus on those issues where there is actually agreement, and maybe accept that there are certain questions where there's just no agreement and no recommendations will be able to be made. Or the group might decide to have some further efforts on those specific issues to see if the different positions can come closer. So basically that's where the group stands. There's no meeting foreseen here in Nairobi as we didn't have sufficient participants on the ground here. So if you're interested in some further information, here's a link to the workspace of the working group, the issues report, and again, of this, the issues report are translations available as well. Are there any questions?
Anyone from Marika?
Yeah, I just have a quick question, and probably a naive one, actually. If we don't make recommendations on the inconclusive results, are we at risk of being forced into a position we don't want to be?
Well, I guess the only thing could happen if the working group would decide that they're, for example, opposing recommendations. One would say we should change this, and the other says we shouldn't change this, and take that back to the GNSO Council. It's, I guess, then for the GNSO Council to make an assessment. But as, of course, there's a representation as well on the GNSO Council of the different stakeholders, it's very likely that would be a similar stalemate, I guess, unless there's any kind of really convincing evidence that the Juniata Council would think, oh, well, you know, we believe that one opinion, you know, is not valid or not supported by sufficient people, they might, I guess, still deliberate that. But in principle, I would be very surprised if there's really a split where one is saying yes and the other says no. I would be very surprised if the Juniata Council then just chooses one or the other. But again, it's you know, I'm looking at Stéphane. At that point, I guess it's for the Juniata Council to deliberate that and decide. It might be as well that another option they would have is give it back and saying, look, we really think this is an issue that we would like to have some kind of recommendation that is supported by the working group. So this specific thing we want to give back to you, and we would like to ask you to spend a little bit more time on it. That would be another alternative, I guess.
Great.
I guess to me, on that point about whether what we're going to get out of it, I guess I always thought that in the sessions I participated in, that we really were discussing the wrong thing. And so if we want to have productive discussion, then we should encourage reformulation of the question about not with what happens in terms of the notice, but what happens post-expiry, but what happens pre-expiry with the terms to notice and that kind of thing. So it may be more constructive to try and get focus on what we think is the real question and have the inquiry be into that, as opposed to the inquiry be into something that we think maybe isn't as applicable.
Okay, we have a queue. I'm sorry, excuse me, Marika. So it's going to be James and then Michaela after that. Marika, did you want to reply to Gray, or are you good?
No, I mean, I think looking indeed at the survey, I think there are some areas where you can see indeed that on the pre-expiration questions, there's definitely some agreement. For example, you know, the status of status messages related to who is. I think there are quite some people that say, well, yes, that there could be some more clarity around that, and that might help registrants understand what the status is of their registration. So I guess that's a fair point.
Okay. James?
Yeah, thanks, Mason. This is James. One of the common themes that has come up fairly frequently in this group has been just the lack of any attempt or effort to quantify the problem that we're trying to solve. And I think that getting back to the idea of what sort of recommendations we're looking for, or is there a concern that lack of recommendations or silence on this issue would create more problems? I think that any... and I'm editorializing here a little bit, but any policy recommendations or even some of the best practice recommendations that would come out of this group would be inherently flawed just because of our lack of understanding of the problem. And so I think that, you know, I know that a lot of the other registrars on the group as well feel similarly, that we should be either working towards quantifying the problem or staying away from any recommendations at all.
Can I just respond to that?
Please do.
Because one point I would like to make, and I know many have, you know, re-emphasized, where's the data, where's the problem, where's the issue, but, you know, having done some of the research and, you know, having had some of the discussions in the group, I think one of the things to aspire would be as well, like, transparency and predictability. And, you know, although there might not be figures around actual harm caused, you might want to think as well on, you know, from the consumer perspective, the benefit of having predictability and transparency on what's going to happen. So that's maybe something as well to add. And from a personal perspective, I think that would be as well a good outcome, if that would be an outcome of the group, that if people would say, well, it is indeed now more clear and transparent what is going to happen or where I can find information, I think that would be as well an added value.
Going back to James and then Michaela.
Yeah, Marika, I think there's some validity to what you're saying. I think transparency is always good, that registrants can make an informed choice. But I think that sometimes the idea of transparency and predictability turns into sort of this reflexive support for uniformity. And just looking across the table here and all the folks in Nairobi and the spectrum of business models and customer markets, I think that we need to be careful of saying that uniformity is always a good thing in all situations. And I think that, you know, providing a buffet of consumer choices is also something that we should be working for, as long as they're informed choices, like you were saying, transparency.
Okay, Michaela?
Just picking up a bit on what others have said, I mean, it would be fantastic if we could move forward, get something positive from this. The problem that I've seen, though, with the group is that certain elements are not going to be reasonable about it. While we can all agree on the base concepts of the transparency, predictability in terms of letting people know in advance what will happen to domains if they don't renew them, and making sure that people are actually informing registrants in advance, et cetera, all that is fine, and there isn't a huge problem there. There are certain elements within that group who have rather strange concepts of reality. I mean, one member of the group seems to think it is perfectly reasonable that all mail destined for an expired domain should be held by the registrar indefinitely. Yet when pushed on how this is actually going to be paid for, is incapable of coming up with any sane explanation, and is also completely unable to to address any of the basic technical issues with some of these crazy concepts, nor is that person willing to accept that the legal liability of us accepting responsibility for all their mail is completely insane. I mean, it'd be great if things could be moved forward, but at the same time, the group needs to be guided towards that. And the feeling I personally have at this stage is that it lacks that guidance.
Marika, would you like to weigh in on that before we go to the next person, or?
No.
Okay. Okay, Matt.
I think the silence here really personally concerns me, because I think it's showing the wrong people that our group has something to hide, and I would certainly favour the idea of concluding what we think the actual real questions are, and twisting our answer a little to our benefit and not to our potential detriment.
Mason, there's another question here, I think, in the room.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, this is Werner.
Okay, Matt, thank you.
From CORE.
Any other questions from Marika on post-expiry?
Yes. This is Werner from CORE. We have inside CORE, which is actually a membership organization where the registrars and members, we have quite a diversity of opinions about how post-expiration issues should be handled. And, of course, one of the biggest problems that we saw was that our members said, look, we see the practices of others, and it is very difficult for us to explain to the customer beforehand that we're actually doing better. The customer doesn't know that. The customer doesn't care. And the customer automatically assumes they'll be behaving as badly as other registrars do. Now, it may be a cultural question, but in Europe, typically, we would not expect a domain name to be taken away from a given registrant without being deleted. You know, either it is your domain or it is not your domain, but the domain name is taken away from you, but is not deleted and suddenly accrues to the registrar, and the registrar puts possibly pay-per-click advertising on it, possibly reads your mail. You don't know what the registrar is going to do with it. And there is no way of having some standardized communications with the customer to say, no, we're not doing this. You know, he wouldn't even know what to do. There's no resource for the customers to know what the registrar behavior is going to be. There's no name for the practice at all. And in the end, we as registrars as a whole suffer from the behavior of some who actually use those practices and basically make everybody look bad. So I think we have an interest in standardizing a little bit, at least standardizing the communication about it.
Jeff?
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, address Vernon, your point and some of the other stuff. We've discussed this in the meeting, but we've said how many people at that time when they do the registration and look through, actually look at that information and see if it's up there. You know, people are saying after the fact, they're saying, oh, I didn't see it when I was looking. But even if it is there, most people are not looking for that information. And I don't think that part of the job of ICANN and what we're supposed to do is increase consumer awareness of the and send the message out. I don't know how we can, you know, we can't be responsible for, I won't say, you know, customer ignorance, and there's nothing we can really do to solve that. I don't know, and I think that's what part of this group is looking for, and I think that's part of the issues that we've we've come to.
Okay, Jeff, thanks. Anyone else for the queue on this issue? Okay, Marika, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just want to thank everyone for their participation in all the working groups. It's definitely appreciated. And maybe just one point to mention before someone else takes the mic, that talking about the working group guidelines earlier today, there will also be an information session tomorrow between 3 and 4. So there's the proposed GNSO working group guidelines that basically lay out how working groups should function, how you should assess representativeness, how decision-making should be handled. So if you're interested in that, you know, please come and find that meeting. Thanks.
We had one more question from Michaela, if you would indulge that, Marika.
Yes.
It wasn't a question. It was more of a comment, really. I just see that during a public meeting like this that several of the registrars step up and make some fantastic points. And just it would be really helpful if some of these people were to actually get involved with more of these working groups throughout the year and to actively participate, because the problem is you end up where there's a small core group of people who are stretched thin across multiple working groups, and even if it's just a case of just signing yourself up and just dialing in once every couple of weeks, it would be very, very helpful.
Kaylee, thank you. Tim?
Yeah, just a housekeeping point. I wanted to make note that the camera angle would make it seem as though Mariko is drinking about 6 bottles of water at once. Believe me, she wouldn't be in that chair this long if she was. These are not all her bottles of water. I just wanted, those of you not in the room don't realize that.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Maybe one of them is full of vodka and we just don't know it. Okay, Mariko, thank you very much for all your time.
No problem. You're welcome.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying no problem. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think Liz is in the room and ready to go as soon as we get her slides ready.
I'm here.
Okay,
wasn't the RAA next, or did we change order?
Well,
no, let me
actually, I think Steve Metalitz is going to talk later about the RA amendments, but I don't think there's anyone to talk about the registrant rights thing. So if you want me to give a really brief overview of the registrant rights charter, I can do that now. I don't have any slides, but...
No, that'd be great, actually, if you would. Sure.
Margie, if you give me 1 second
sure.
Before you just start, I saw something on the chat, and I just wanted to bring it up to the room. I guess it was Matt had the question. If anybody, you know, we're always looking for participation into the working groups. If there's anybody in the room who would like to participate or get involved going forward, please definitely come see me, and we can tell you how the process goes. I think, Mason, maybe if you send something to the list, or if people in Reston want to keep getting close-ups on the camera. People in Reston can go to you, but I think we're always looking for new people, and this way we get different viewpoints from different registrars. So definitely if you're in this room and you would like to participate, come see me during the breaks or during lunch.
All right. See Jeff the Rabbit Eckhouse if you're interested. Okay. Back to you, Margie.
Okay, sure. As part of the RAA working group, there's two sub-teams, one that dealt with the RAA amendments, and Steve will talk about that later, and then the subgroup A talked about the registrant rights charter, and this was an initiative from the at-large community. They really wanted to get this thing called a registrant rights charter put together. To remind you, that in the 2009 amendment process that we went through a year ago, there was one amendment that said that if a registrant rights charter was developed, that registrars would point to it whenever it gets developed. And so one of the projects that was coming out of this subgroup A was to develop this registrant rights charter. And essentially what it does is it describes in plain language the terms of the RAA that relate to registrant rights. And so it's a summary of what's in the existing agreement. And that document is pretty close to final. We didn't publish it because we ran out of time before Nairobi, but it's going to get published after Nairobi, and certainly you guys can take a look at it. It's very similar to the plain language document that was circulated just before Nairobi. And it just documents what's in the existing agreement. When this group got together, the folks that were representatives from the at-large community were a little surprised that that was the approach we were going to take, because they were interested in something else. And what they were interested in producing was something called an aspirational charter. And I think you may hear this phrase, because they wanted to make a list of things that registrants should have, rights that should apply to registrants regardless of whether it was actually in the RAA. And so you will see an initiative, and they're discussing it at the at-large community, to try to identify, these high-level principles that should apply to all registrants. And what they when they come up with this list, I think they're going to, present it and hope that if it reflects things that aren't in the RAA or that aren't in the amendments that are being currently evaluated, that somehow that might lead to further amendments to the RAA to deal with these aspirational issues. So that's kind of the subpart that is ongoing, but it's at the moment the work is being done in the at-large community instead of the subgroup that we just put together, because the subgroup only focused on existing rights that are in the current agreement. Does that make sense? I don't know if you have any questions, but that's essentially where we are in that project.
Okay. Thank you, Margie. Any questions on this for Margie? Okay. I think you're off the hook, Margie.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Liz.
Hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening, good night. I'm going to give an overview of the GNSO requested WHOIS studies, and I just want to note that this is the same slide deck I used Saturday and the same one I'll use tomorrow in the GNSO open meeting, so I'm not going to go into as much detail, just so we can whip through and give some chance for questions and such, but the intent of this presentation is to just give you an update on the five WHOIS study areas that the GNSO Council requested that staff take a look at last year. There were four studies that the council asked us, study areas, sort of broad study areas, that the council asked us to look at in March of last year, and then another special study, a compilation of WHOIS service requirements, that they asked us to take a look at in May of last year. So I thought I would just do a quickie update for those who may not have heard the previous presentation, and try to leave time for a little discussion. So let me just jump ahead to a couple of slides here. So you know the goals, I think, of WHOIS studies, that policy issues have been debated for many years, lots of competing viewpoints, and the debate has not led to any significant policy changes related to WHOIS. So the council essentially felt that developing studies might be a way of providing a factual foundation that would provide insights to enable further policymaking and perhaps break some of the gridlock that's occurred over the years in terms of different viewpoints. And they asked staff to determine costs and feasibility for conducting one or more of these studies. So I just want to be clear here that at least the first four areas that I'm going to talk about are areas where, we were looking at costs and feasibility and whether they made sense to do. And the fifth area, which is the special case, WHOIS requirements compilation, will actually are in the process of conducting that study. It's really, again, not a study so much as a compilation, and I'll explain that in just a sec. So the first of five areas of study deals with WHOIS misuse. These are two possible studies using two different approaches to assess whether public WHOIS information significantly increases harmful acts, and to assess the impact of anti-harvesting measures. We, again, took the approach, and there are two different approaches here within the misuse studies, two different ways of trying to get to testing those hypotheses, one that's a survey approach and one that would actually measure a variety of acts by using WHOIS published information and unpublished test addresses. We did use a RFP approach to determine the cost and feasibility. This was done because we just simply didn't have the expertise in-house to ensure that we could develop costs that would be accurate or, you know, fully assess feasibility without having input from expert researchers. So we did launch an RFP in the September of last year. We got three responses. We're actually just about done with our analysis. I hope to provide this analysis to the GNSO Council before the next council meeting, which is scheduled for 1 April 2010, to give them time to review the analysis before that meeting, and they can begin talking about it. The report's essentially written. I'm just finalizing the details internally. If you'd like to know more about what we asked researchers to comment on, the link there is to the full terms of reference for that WHOIS misuse study. Without going into any big analysis, and again, there is analysis forthcoming, I just want to give you a general sense of the costs that we're anticipating for this. These two studies, you know, roughly $150,000 U.S. to conduct. So just a frame of reference, you know, for further conversations about it. And, you know, we will be providing some analysis on the details as well. By the way, just in terms of the RFP approach and the handling of responses that we got back, we did develop a objective criteria to evaluate the responses, and we've also, you know, applied that criteria. If we get to the point where the council agrees that we should move forward on this, we'll have a objective foundation to select the winning candidate, if you will, to conduct that study. So the next area has to do with the registrant identification, specifically how registrants identify themselves and who is, and to what extent domains owned by businesses or used for commercial purposes are not clearly identified as such and who is, and also try to tie that or correlate that to the use of privacy and proxy services. So, for example, perhaps the actual domain user's identity was obscured in some way by a proxy or privacy service, or suggest that the registrant is a non-business entity acting without commercial purpose. That was really the scope and intent of a hypothesis that the council wanted us to look at. Once again, we used an RFP approach, which we posted in October. We got five responses. Our analysis, again, is almost complete. I will be providing this analysis along with the analysis of the misuse studies before this April 1 meeting of the council to give them time to consider. And again, the terms of reference for that study, if you're interested in the details of, you know, we basically wanted to be as granular and specific in requesting proposals from interested researchers so that they would have a clear idea of, you know, what's intended, what we were looking for. And so we really tried to get very specific and as precise as possible in asking researchers to comment. So five responses received, and our report is imminent to the GNSO Council. The third area has to do with proxy and privacy services, and actually there's two distinct studies in here that we originally clustered together, but that I think will end up being separate RFPs. One we're calling the Proxy and Privacy Abuse Study for short. That study looks at the extent to which domain names used to conduct illegal or harmful internet activities are registered via proxy and privacy services. So far, this study seems technically doable, but might be challenging because of the need for assistance from many input sources and would likely need a lot of community participation. So we've been delayed in the issuance of that RFP, particularly since we also wanted to take the time to get the analysis on the first two sets to the GNSO Council as quickly as possible. I actually hope to release the study by the end of March. It might be early April, but we've already had a lot of consultations with the community about how we might shape the study, so it's somewhat far along in terms of preparing an RFP. The other area, topic area related to proxy and privacy services, we're calling, you know, in an abbreviated way, the REVEAL study. And the REVEAL study would measure the responses of proxy and privacy services to requests to reveal information about the registrant or a licensee of the service. This study, I think, is logistically difficult because it seems to require that there be actual victims of actionable harm to originate the reveal requests accompanied by evidence of harm. So we're continuing to assess how we might structure this study to actually make it workable, to make it feasible, and that's going to take us a little longer to do. So my sense, just in terms of sequence here, is that you know, we'll quickly turn over reports to the council on the first two areas and encourage the council to discuss and decide whether they think we should be moving forward on those studies and you know, the budget issues associated with that. Hopefully, if they do think that that's the case, to be recommended for the fiscal year 2011 budget. I'm guessing with these other studies that it might end up just being that they are considered for the following year, but that's still to be determined. That's kind of where we are on the proxy and privacy services studies. There was a fourth area that was proposed to look at non-ASCII WHOIS, and particularly to look at client-side software and how client-side software displays non-ASCII registration information. We decided to really put this study on hold because of the work that's going on right now in the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. This is a joint SSAC and GNSO working group that is really looking at technical issues related to whether there should be a standard for internationalized contact information related to WHOIS. And the feeling was, at least from the staff's perspective, that depending on what the outcomes of that group might be, that it might negate the need for this study. We're also asking that group to take a look at this proposal to see if they concur, to see if they think there would be value in incorporating this study into the work that they're doing. But that group is at a fairly nascent stage. There was a presentation on Sunday, and then I guess yesterday also in the CCNSO, GNSO lunch about the status of this working group. And Julie Headland on the ICANN policy staff and Steve Shang are good contacts if you would like to know more about what that group is doing and how they're progressing. It's a pretty interesting set of issues coming from a very technical perspective on that. Next area is this WHOIS service requirements inventory. This request came from the council in May of last year, and it was really to ask staff to compile a list of WHOIS service requirements based really on two things. One are, what are all the existing requirements in the RAA and in registry agreements that have to do with WHOIS, enumerate them compile them as part of this report. And then the second significant area was to look at deficiencies in WHOIS that have been raised over time, and also policy recommendations that may have been recommended or discussed over time, and to try to just catalog them and incorporate them into this report so that there would be, I think the intent is overall, a comprehensive compendium of what might all be required. I have another slide deck where I can go into hopefully brief detail on the content of that service compilation, because we're actually quite far in doing that work, and I can just give you a hint sort of the kinds of things that are being enumerated in that report. Yes.
Why don't we break here, if you don't mind? We've got Steve McAllister who's going to be with us in about 5 minutes.
Oh, sure.
So I know there are going to be some questions for you on some of these issues. So do you mind if we stop now and take a few questions?
Great.
Okay. Jeff?
What? Raise your hand. No, in the thing. But
Jeff,
so,
you're up.
Yeah, thanks. So can we go back to the slide on the commercial purposes on that, looking at the WHOIS on, I believe, yes, okay. So this one, I was looking at the terms of reference and the commercial purposes, and it's fairly wide on what a domain is considered as being used for commercial purposes and what it's not. Is there any plans to sort of tighten those terms up? Because, like, for example, you know, for people, I don't think it was clearly defined as for people who have domains for domain parking is a big part. That's not listed as commercial purposes. For example, I have a blog, and I have ads on that blog. I earn some meager sum of revenue from that. But I do it mostly to write about certain topics. Is that a commercial purpose? I'm just trying to figure that out. And will it, after the study is done, will it list saying, here's the domain, here's what it, you know, we listed it as commercial or non-commercial, just so that people will know going forward?
Right. So you've raised a good issue. There's definitely going to be judgment calls in the course of the study itself. Some determinations will be quite easy. Some will be much more ambiguous. We, in the development of the terms of reference for this, we relied to some degree on the definitions developed by NORC for the proxy and privacy service that they studied, that they are doing, and the accuracy study that they're doing, so that we could at least have some continuity and consistency around definitions. And we also developed some definitions as part of a GNSO effort in advance of even launching this, that I think there's in the bibliography or appendix to the terms of reference, there's a reference to a set of definitions that were developed by the GNSO Council that I think addresses that at least in part. But I definitely recognize the vagaries. And the one thing I can't answer offhand that I'm not sure of is the specific data. Would we be able to produce the specific data and the conclusions or determinations that are made for each? And I'd be glad to check on that and get back to you.
Yeah, that would be great if we can see the data. So you're saying that it will be piggybacking off the NORC studies. Have they released the domains that they used and how they identified those as commercial or non-commercial? So maybe we could get a background on saying, hey, these were the domains we used. These were the ones that we identified as commercial or non-commercial, because it would help, because if you're going to piggyback off that, it would sort of give us a baseline of what they considered as commercial and non-commercial, and sort of open it up for people to have a better understanding, maybe clear away some of the, you know, the vague issues. I think that might help.
I'm not sure on the compliance study. I suspect Pam's not going to be sure either. Sure. Great.
Pam Little is going to come up.
Pam Little from Contractual Compliance. In relation to the question Jeff just raised, I think there was another gentleman, actually Paul, asked that during the GNSO meeting on Saturday. And I did go back to NORC asking about whether they would release the list of domains they used for the study and the who is data they used for the study. And the response I got back was not positive, in that they said they were doing this study as part of a survey, and they are survey best practice or confidentiality constraints that they are bound by. So they actually said that during the Sydney workshop that the resulting database would be confidential. And all this survey, they actually told the respondents that the resulting information would only use to inform the policy debate rather than any other purpose. So as far as the data is concerned, they are saying they can't release to the public.
I'd like to make one additional comment, though, if I could, which is that we had never intended to rely on the specific data from NORC to do this study, because it would have been stale. So instead, what was really important to us was to use the same criteria and definitions so that there could be consistency, but we never intended to use the same data pool.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't more about seeing data, but saying using those definitions to say how they derived those definitions so that we had an idea. And just, I'm not, you know, I guess a little bit of frustration, because the who is issue is so important to registrars, and there's all, you know, data sets, definitions, and underlying meanings, and everyone comes out and says, sorry, we can't show you this, it's all confidential, but we're going to make changes to your business dependent upon that data. So I just, sorry, expressing a little frustration on that.
Well, and I do think in anticipation of those kinds of concerns, the GNSO Council spent time even before they voted to approve pursuing these studies to actually conduct several working sessions to develop these definitions and ensure agreement among the council on the definitions. So I want to be really clear that these are not ICANN develop definitions. They're definitions developed by the community.
All right. Thanks, Liz. So I'm sorry, before we keep going, John, I have you in the queue. You're next. So just in the way of housekeeping, we're going to have Steve Metalis join us in just a bit. And we're going to change the agenda a bit. I understand the food for lunch is already in the room in Nairobi, so instead of Tim taking up the AOC review team, we're going to break for lunch, and then Tim will start after that. All right, John Berryhill.
Yeah, Liz, I just had a quick question. In the privacy proxy reveal study, you had said something about there being some prerequisite that there be actionable harm to determine whether or not the services are improperly disclosing the registrant information.
Right. I mean, it's hard to make up a case, right, to
right.
a hypothetical case of abuse and a request for takedown.
But if you want to find out whether or not the services are improperly revealing the registrant data, then, you know, you could just say something stupid and see if they reveal the data. I guess people, you know, pay for these services, and I guess I'm not sure what you're measuring. Are you measuring whether or not people are getting what they're paying for, or...
We're measuring, I think the intent of this hypothesis, first of all, wasn't in terms of that so much as what level of response do requesters get
right.
When they sort of follow the rules. They have an actual case, they have at least a, you know, assertion of actionable harm. What level of response do they get when they try to query the information from proxy and privacy services?
Right, but if you don't satisfy a reasonable level of showing actionable harm and you do get the registrant information, then you're obtaining valuable data about whether or not the privacy proxy service is doing what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we're interested in. I mean, we're not interested in the domain registrants being protected. We're interested in other people. I mean, which are you trying to measure, or are you trying to measure both?
Well, the specific hypothesis is really driven by the response, mm-hmm. not the flip side. This is a tough study.
mm-hmm.
This is a complicated study on a number of different levels,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of why we've left it for last. I think your point is interesting, and my suggestion is, with each one of these studies, let me just say, I've done a lot of sort of offline consultation with as many, right?
Let's actually
make sure to do that with this one. It might even take a couple of different iterations, because even if it means adjusting the mm-hmm. hypotheses of the study to include that could be a significant improvement to what we ultimately present. So if you could hold that thought till we get to the point where we really can take a deep dive into that, it sounds worthwhile to try to do both. And if you, I don't think I'm going to have time until I get these released to even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I get these first ones released, if you want to be in touch with me, then I'd love to, you know, begin to think about that in advance. So
I think it would be telling to domain registrants whether ICANN is only measuring one side and not the other.
Mm-hmm. And recall that these hypotheses
seems to suggest an agenda that you know, I know you don't have.
So the other point I just want to be sure is on the record is we didn't come up with these hypotheses. The community came up with these hypotheses, and the community debated them for months and months and months before.
Right.
There have been some new hypotheses to have come forward, and you know where they're relevant and should be linked. You know, we're happy to consider that, but you know, this is intended to be kind of responding to what the council told us to do. So,
right.
Yeah.
But it's a limited community.
Okay, John. Thanks. I know we have one more in the queue. Actually, Paul Staher is in the room and would like to discuss. And then James Ian Reston has a question, and then I think we're going to cut it here in favor of Steve, who I think is holding patiently on the line. So, Paul?
Thanks. It's Paul Stahura. I'm not representing any registrar. I'm representing myself. I asked Pam for the WHOIS information. It's basically in that study, there was a list of 1,400 domain names, and then they did a WHOIS lookup on each of those 1,400 domain names and used that WHOIS as a basis for the study. So just to be clear, I didn't ask Pam for the whole survey results. I just want the list of domain names and the WHOIS information corresponding to each, because I think that that information, publicizing that information, it would be very valuable for the community to see that, to visually inspect that information, to see, you know, just visually, is it crap information or good information? And number two, I think also it would illustrate how difficult it is for registrars to understand if it's good or bad themselves. So that was my reason to get this public information. It's a domain name and WHOIS, public information. Why can't they release it?
Liz, do you want to take that?
So this is Paul's talking about a compliance study. I think Pam's presenting later on that accuracy study. So I have no comment.
Okay. All right. James, and this will be the last question for now for Liz.
Hi, Liz. James here. I remember in the session over the weekend there was a discussion of price or cost estimates for these studies. Do you have those figures again for this group?
Right. So this is really jumping the gun a little because none of it's published. But for these first two study areas, misuse and registrant identification, the rough estimates, and again, we'll put it in writing, we'll give you more, are $150,000 each to do. So just as a trailer to that, it is going to be important for the council to consider these in the context of the 2011 budget. These studies were not budgeted for 2011. There are a number of reasons for that. It was not an oversight. People know that we've been considering these studies for quite some time. Part of the reason, I think, was just not knowing how much the studies would cost, so it's hard to budget money, and I wouldn't have known where to guess even at the time. I think there's some other factors in terms of budget constraints. Timing and such, and really wanting to get the GNSO's viewpoint on these studies. You know, the decision to assess this was a controversial one, and I think you know that registrars and many of the non-commercial folks didn't recommend pursuing this effort at all. So it was very important to us to have a chance to feed the information back to the council, including the costs and some analysis, and then, in a sense, turn it into the council to say, tell us what you think out of this evaluation, how we should proceed. So I've urged the council chair, Chuck, and we've had some discussion about how we can actually have this conversation perhaps in a broader budget conversation, because I think it is advisable for the council to think about what extraordinary expenses beyond even WHOIS studies might be relevant for consideration in fiscal year 2011, things like, you know, whether there should be face-to-face meetings on certain issues and how much, questions about whether, you know, an expert or economist might need to be hired to support some PDP, things like that. So there's a broader kind of budget context that I think will be important for the council to consider these in, and I'll have more information on costs very shortly.
All right, Liz, thank you. Stefan, at the risk of raising the ire of everybody in the room because you're postponing lunch, I'll call on you, but then that'll be the last one.
Thanks, Mason. Just a short comment. Liz, I don't know if you were in the room earlier on when we were discussing another topic, and I mentioned the way that the staff supporting the GNSO is now clearly overworked and overwhelmed. I just wanted to make the comment that, to me, this is a clear example of something that we shouldn't be giving priority to, and that is, you know, staff resources plus the budgetary issues that you've just mentioned would be better allocated elsewhere, in my opinion. And we have, as far as the registrar reps on the council are concerned, I think we've made those feelings clear.
And I would acknowledge that it is resource intensive.
All right, Stefan, thank you. Liz, would like to thank you for your time. Thanks for spending some time with us and sharing where we are with the WHOIS studies. I also, just in the way of housekeeping, too, I want to point out that Matt is going to make available all of the presentations from staff today on the registrar's website. Okay, Steve Metallitz, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Can you all hear me?
I believe we can.
Okay.
All right. I'd like to give the floor to you, and then if you'd be available for a few questions, that'd be great.
Sure. And cognizant that I'm the only thing standing between you and lunch in Nairobi, I'll try to be as brief as possible. I just wanted to give you a status report on Subteam B of the RAA Amendments Drafting Team, which I've been convening. Subteam A is the one dealing with the Registrant's Bill of Rights, and I'm not familiar with what they're doing. But this is the brief report on Subteam B. Could we have the next slide, please? Just to remind you what the tasks were that the GNSO Council set for this subteam, there were three of them. First, to compile the topics for possible RAA amendments. Second, to identify any of those that might be colliding with consensus policy or be better handled that route. And third, recommend next steps. What should we go do from here? The subteam has been meeting on a biweekly basis for the last several months, and we have proceeded in the following way. We combined the first two tasks, really went through the whole list of topics that that we got, and we've added to that because there were so many suggestions. We thought it would be helpful to provide some guidance as to which ones we thought would be higher priority or lower priority, some in the latter category may be perhaps less feasible than in the first category. Next slide, please. This is where we got our suggestions from. The ICANN staff did a very detailed set of proposals, and it was a combined proposal reflecting the work of the compliance staff and the registrar team and others within ICANN. So that was extremely helpful. We got a lot of suggestions from a coalition of law enforcement agencies from seven countries. We also spent an entire meeting with Bobby Flame from the FBI to walk through all of those. Then there was an IPC working group that had actually been convened to work on the last iteration of the RAA, and that group has sent forward a number of topics for consideration. And then there were some individual submissions. So we put all these together in a chart, and I've given you there the link to the latest version of that as we've gone through it and tried to fill in the priorities as we've been able to work them out. I think the next slide tells you where we stand on all of this. Let's go to the next slide, please. Thank you. We're almost done with tasks one and two, and if you look at that chart, we've gone through the whole chart, but there's a lot of overlap, and there have been some questions raised about whether the chart presents everything in the right order. So that's the step we're at now, is making, kind of cleaning up that chart to make sure that it's intelligible and that it accurately reflects the discussions that we've had. We're just beginning the discussion of task three on next steps. What do we recommend that ought to be done with this list of topics? So that's going to be kind of on our front burner over the next few weeks. We're working against a timetable that calls for submitting our draft report around April 7th. That date was chosen so that it could, in theory, be taken up by the GNSO Council at its next at the meeting, the subsequent meeting, which I think is April 21st or something like that. So that's the timetable we're targeting, and I think with luck we can make that. I think we're pretty much I think we'll be able to hit that target. At least I hope so. And I think the next slide is the last slide. Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to all the people that have been participating quite actively on this, including quite a few members of this stakeholder group. Michaela, I think, has been perhaps the most vocal and active of our participants, but I know Staten and Tatiana and others have been quite diligent on the call. So I wanted to thank all of you and also the ICANN staff, Margie Milam, and others who've been most helpful in helping us organize a pretty daunting volume of material. So I'll just conclude there, and I'd be glad to try to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you very much, Steve. Any questions? Wow, Steve, you're in danger of actually getting off the hook here.
I guess people must be really hungry.
I guess so. All right. Well, listen, Steve, thank you very much for sharing some time with us. Much appreciated.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I understand that I mistakenly cut Liz off, and she has about another 5 minutes of material before we break for lunch. Did I have that right, Liz?
Yeah, that's correct. We're going to put her slides up, and then Liz is going to go, and then we're going to break for lunch.
Okay, sounds good.
Not standing
all right,
between
Liz,
you all
you.
And lunch. Well, let me tell you two things real quick. The first is that on this SSEC GNSO IRD working group, they are going to be giving another presentation at the SSEC open meeting today. I think Edmund Chung is going to do the presentation. He's the co-chair of that group. If for some reason he can't, then one of our ICANN staff members, Steve Sheng, will be giving that presentation. But for those of you who are interested in where that stands, that's coming up today. I wanted to very quickly give you a progress report on this WHOIS service requirements study, which is this compilation of potential requirements for WHOIS. And this work is being done also by Steve Sheng, and we are targeting to have a first draft released to the GNSO Council by the end of March, 1st of April. This is a slide that has the May 7th, 09 Council resolution, again, that was really focused on collecting and organizing a set of requirements for community consideration. And I want to emphasize here that requirements really means technical requirements, not defining policy requirements, except to the degree that policy requirements require the technical capability. So he's extracted the technical pieces without trying to define in any way any policy recommendations or conclusions. So I just wanted to run through very quickly the preliminary compilations that's going to be included in this, and if you have any questions, it's there on the slide about what's meant by any of this. I'll be happy to try to answer those questions, but it's a mechanism to find authoritative WHOIS servers, element on structured queries, the need for well-defined schema for replies, standardizing errors, and a standardized set of query capabilities, the quality of domain registration data, which has to do with accuracy, how current the data is, this issue of internationalization that we're also talking about in the other working group, and the need potentially, well, the absence of a mechanism today to indicate the character sets that are in use. Also potential security requirements, authentication and authorization and auditing capabilities, recognition that there is both thick and thin WHOIS out there today, and then including a registrar abuse point of contact, which was a recommendation that the SSEC had proposed. So that just to give you a taste of the kinds of technical requirements that will be in this compilation, which we'll be producing by the end of the month. And one of the requirements in the GNSO resolution on this was to make sure that we consult with other SOs and ACs on the draft. So that will be occurring during March and April with the intent of releasing a final report by May 2010. And Steve Sheng is the key policy person developing that work with a little help that I can give. Happy to take questions on that or let you eat lunch.
Okay. Okay, Liz, thank you very much. Any other questions? All right. Liz, appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Tim, you have one item of housekeeping before we break, and then I might say, too, that it's now 5 past the hour. We'll reconvene at 40 past, and then Tim Ruiz here in Reston will take up the AOC review team issue, and then we'll have Peter and Rod at, I believe it's 2 o'clock local. All right, Tim?
Thanks, Mason. I just wanted to mention that the tech folks here in the room may be doing a little maintenance on the chat room or other things during the break. So if you come back and you have to reconnect or something, that might happen. I'm just trying to give people a heads up now. And with that, I think chicken dinner, we can go eat lunch.
All right, lunch until 40 past the hour. Thanks very much, everybody.